WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. If you prefer spelling to numbers, dial that number in. Be a part of the show. We love to hear from our listeners. Coming up later tonight, Donald Trump's gone all hawk on us real quick. And we're going to try and put the pieces together and figure out what all of this means for what's happening with North Korea. Where is the USS Carl Vinson? We will get to the bottom of that.
More fun in North Korea.
But this is the first time in 3 weeks that Lisa Nichols is here.
Has it been 5 years?
It seems that way.
How long? I haven't seen you.
It seems that way. We had PJ Weston with us a couple of weeks ago. Well, yes. Where were you?
I was in Miami. I was actually in the car driving back from the Florida Keys to Miami, listening to the show, listening to you and PJ. I'm not sure if everybody enjoyed it in the car, so I turned it off at some point.
Why didn't everyone in the car enjoy it? It was a great show.
It was. I heard a lot of it. And actually, I was at a brewery outside drinking beer because, you know, it's 85 degrees down there. And I was listening to the show there, and it was really good. And then last week, I welcomed you with a gentle hug.
Yes.
Because you are fragile.
Yeah, so stupid, that would be me, took advantage of the first warm Saturday that we had so far this year a couple weeks ago to go do some yard work. And not only pulled a hamstring, but also completely wrenched my back. So
not good.
So I had a combination of hamstring and sciatica going at the same time. I could not sit down for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And I'm not making that up. I could not sit down for 3 days.
You're just like pantically pacing back and forth.
If you know what a Charlie horse feels like, and if you are an adult, you do. Imagine you sit down and that pain is in your right middle thigh and will not go away. And gets worse the longer you sit in that position.
Yeah.
That's what I've been dealing with.
Does not sound good.
Terrible. Horrible.
And then I ask you if you're icing, and no, of course not.
I was told no heat. I wasn't told no ice.
No, you have to ice.
But it was, you know, after 3 days of muscle spasms, that calmed down. I have feeling in my right foot again, which is a huge plus. I kind of missed that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have 100% of the feeling in my right foot, but a lot of it's back.
Yeah.
So,
the ability to be mobile and walk is generally a thing you need to get through the day. But we're back.
Yes, we are. I did make it down to New York City last weekend. I got to see Sunday in the Park with George. It was great. Mm-hmm. Had a good time. Went to Bobby Vann's.
Beautiful weekend for it, too.
The risotto remains heavenly. Lisa knows about the risotto.
Oh, my God.
This is actually one of the best trips I've ever taken because we check into the hotel, and the last time we stayed there, which was in December when, mm-hmm, Lisa, you came down with us. You may recall they stuck us in one of the smallest rooms in the place, directly in front of the air compressors for the heating and air conditioning system. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, we could not hear the air compressors, but we could hear the elevator door every time it opened because we were also next to the elevator shaft.
Perfect.
In spite of this experience, I booked with the hotel again, and we check in, and they're like, would you like a free upgrade to our executive suite? And I'm like, yes, as a matter of fact, I would.
Yes, I absolutely will take you on that offer.
So they throw us in the executive suite, and it's the same bedroom that all the other rooms have. It's got a little, you know, living room area out front. We got two TVs. We got a leather couch. But the best part is the bathroom has a jacuzzi.
Ooh.
Guess where Derek spent part of Saturday? As soon as I saw that, I was like, I cannot wait to get into that jacuzzi.
You told your wife, I'm sure, just, you know, bring you a bourbon, and you filled it with Mr. Bubbles.
It's going to feel so good. Yeah.
Oh. I'm just picturing that scene from Billy Madison, and you're fighting with the shampoo and conditioner. You had one of those moments?
No, I didn't. Somebody apparently had used some bubble bath in the jacuzzi, because as soon as I turned it on, the bubbles started popping up, and that was not me.
So you thought that was bubbles.
Yeah. After a day of walking around downtown Manhattan, it was nice to just pop into the jacuzzi.
And it was hot.
Yeah, it was.
It was really hot.
It was hot.
Which you would never think going by the weather yesterday that we had. And today wasn't too nice. But, you know, 95 degrees one day, 45 the next. Welcome to New England.
Springtime in New England. We love it this way.
A lot of news going on, though, in the past 2 weeks.
Is there?
Well, you were here. Oh, you talked about it. Last week, there was so much that we could have talked about.
Yeah, it was one of those weeks where I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, God, I hate to look at all these things that I'm missing. Well, we'll try and make up for some of that tonight. If I can ever get any of the buttons to work. Lisa, what is going on?
Well, in local news, we learned more than 20,000 drug cases compromised in Annie Dukin scandal will be dismissed. Prosecutors across the state on Tuesday said that they will collectively throw out more than 20,000 cases that relied on evidence handled by the disgraced drug lab chemist Annie Dukin. The dramatic step, which specialists called unprecedented in scope, follows years of litigation by defendants whose cases involved evidence that was analyzed by Dukin, who pleaded guilty to tampering with drug samples and fabricating results. The submission of the final list of cases to be dismissed offers the fullest accounting up to date in the disruption caused by the scandal, which came to light in 2012. Quote, the dismissal of thousands of tainted drug lab cases rightly puts justice over results, said the Massachusetts Bar Association legal counsel Martin W. Healy. Quote, it is necessary and long overdue outcome given our criminal defense system's responsibility to ensure a level playing field for all, regardless of the offense, end quote. Michael O'Keefe, district attorney for the Cape and the Islands, said that even though his office would dismiss cases, quote, we believe that the integrity of the system is justice is more important than the conviction, end quote. No conclusions about guilt or innocence should be drawn. So now we're dealing with not just one area, and this is a story that we covered on the show. And several district attorney's offices are dealing with this. Bristol, Essex, yeah. Cape and Islands, Middlesex, Norfolk, Plymouth, and Suffolk.
Just to catch you up on this, Annie Dukin was one of a handful of people who work at the state drug labs, which handle hundreds of cases every single day, but we've only got like five people that test all the drugs in all the drug cases in the state. Annie was doing something known as dry labbing, which is writing down what the drug is without ever testing them. So she'd basically look at it and go, yep, cocaine, methamphetamine, marijuana. I don't know if she was smelling it or just looking at it and saying, looks like coke to me.
She was real good at her job. Because she's like, oh, this one makes my tongue numb, coke.
Because she didn't actually test any of the drugs, all of the convictions are now based on false evidence, and all of the convictions have to be thrown out, which means somewhere in the order of 20,000 drug users or drug dealers or people caught could soon be coming to a neighborhood near you.
Mm-hmm. So this is just 20,000 that were announced that are being dismissed. We're talking about 40,000 cases between the time periods of 2003 and 2012. Again, this is at the Hinton Laboratory in Jamaica Plain, where, yeah, right now she did serve 3 years. In prison, was released in April of last year.
Well, they had to drop her drug conviction because they used her evidence. Yeah. I'm kidding. That did not actually happen. But, yeah.
When we talk about some of the smaller, and I use that hesitantly, smaller cases, because in regards to drug issues and laboratory results, there is no small case. But we do discuss on the show, especially in these local stories, situations where, you know, a couple thousand cases are being either thrown out because of faulty evidence. This is massive. The scope of this story and talking about it, as we were just saying, 20,000 were being dismissed, but 40,000 total over a time period of what, like 9 years, 11 years. And I don't know where this is really going to go from here. Is it going to be more likelihood of that? I would say absolutely yes. And I mean, Derek, now I pose a question to you. Is this fair of what is happening?
What else are you going to do? You know, it's...
Is there any way that you can come back and retest these
cases? No, you can't, because it's... the case has already been prosecuted, and the case has been prosecuted on false evidence. And if we're going to have any measure of confidence in our legal system, the legal system says two things. Number one, you can't be tried twice for the same offense. And number two, if false evidence or improper behavior on the part of jurors, lawyers, or the court,
it's not your problem,
affected the outcome of your case is dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we make sure that innocent people don't get railroaded. In this case, it's going to allow a lot of people who are guilty to go free. Yeah. And some of them, they started releasing people whose cases were pending.
Mm-hmm.
Not people who were in jail, but people who were in jail awaiting trial shortly after this was found out. And most of them wound up back in jail again very quickly, because as soon as they got back on the street, they got back into drugs.
And crime.
Yeah.
Now, what has Massachusetts, and I'm sure there has been a focus across countrywide in laboratories like this to ensure that this doesn't happen again. I mean, is there?
Because I haven't heard a single thing out of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts that would make me think this won't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're talking about, there's like 10 people that work at the state drug labs. We have two of them, I believe. There's the one in JP, there's another one out in Springfield, somewhere.
I was going to say Western Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's out in Western Massachusetts. And I think they've each got like 5 employees. So you would think you could keep tabs on 10 people and make sure that they're actually doing their jobs. And maybe that's what's happening. You know, is they've replaced the supervisor in that facility? I don't know.
I mean, is there just no oversight? If you break down this story, just the basis of it, this is insane to me. I mean, essentially, this is what, because these aren't private laboratories. These are state funded, no?
Yeah. Yeah, no, the drug labs are run by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. They are state agencies.
Means you, Derek, and I, we pay taxes to the state of Massachusetts, which in turn funds these.
Yes, we pay taxes so that Annie Ducan could not do her job.
But knowing that I'm paying taxes for a laboratory to, and I do believe in the justice system, but I also believe that people are properly convicted, that I'm putting money into these laboratories that are just willy-nilly, like, throwing cases around. It's
Whoa, let's come down. You're not asking for actual accountability from our state government, are you?
Here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, it's actually a crazy thought.
We don't do that here. Stop asking those questions. You're a real problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you do a little, you kind of stay under the radar and you do a lot. It's the same thing with stealing.
This is the thing.
Just steal a little, you're not going to get caught.
I can see somebody fudging one every now and again just to meet a quota, or it's been a long day, or you've looked at 40 batches of cocaine and you're like, this has got to be cocaine. And you write cocaine and you go home early, or you go to the bar or whatever. 20,000. 20. This woman was not doing her job at all. She just sat there, she's writing drugs. Hand her a bag, drugs. Hand her another bag, drugs. That's all she's doing all day long. She's not testing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody should have caught on to this.
And again, as I said, a decade.
Yeah.
One decade this was going on.
Yeah, 10 years. Nobody noticed. Way to go, whoever's supervising the state drug lab.
Mm-hmm. Insane to me.
Yeah. Somebody.
Absolutely crazy.
That's the person who ought to be fired. You know, you throw her in jail, obviously, for jeopardizing all these cases. But let's fire some people, too. And like I say, I haven't heard a peep about it. So as far as I know, this is something that will come up again in 10 years when they find someone else pulling a Ducan on the job. That's what it should be called. In national news, President Donald signed an executive order on Tuesday dubbed Buy American, Hire American, designed to strengthen federal contracting rules to benefit United States businesses. The measure largely calls for federal agencies to review existing hiring and contracting programs and to recommend legislation to make U.S. firms more likely to get federal business. It takes particular aim at H-1B visas, which some Silicon Valley firms have used to replace American workers with foreign subcontractors, and mandates that all steel used in government public works projects be melted and poured in the United States. I posted this on the Facebook feed yesterday. facebook.com/bigpicturewmfo. Go over there, sign up. You get one news story a day, and then we don't bother you after that. Wednesdays, you might get a show preview, but you get one story a day, then we don't bother you. Facebook.com/bigpicturewmfo. So I posted this yesterday and said, hey, this is a good thing. And people started crawling out of the woodwork to attack me. people are jumping on it, and they're like, what?
Why are you shocked, though?
You're naive. This is garbage. This is crap. And by the way, they're all people who identify with the left.
Yes.
You know, they're people who are Democrats, if not more extreme than Democrats. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, out of everything that you're going to hate, everything that you're going to bash that this guy does, why would you go after a bill? One person wrote and said, oh, so now we're going to have to settle for crappy American products instead of well-made foreign ones. I'm like, what? No, that's not what the bill says.
Mm-hmm. But you made a perfect point in saying,
and by the way, American companies make good products.
That is true. And that's something that you said. I put an American product next to a foreign good. It just so happens that we have been getting cheap foreign goods, and they're cheap.
Yeah. And the whole government contracting process is built around the idea that the project goes to the lowest bidder who can get the job done. So that incentivizes federal agencies to use foreign lumber and to use foreign steel. And as they're doing that, we're losing lumber industry jobs, we're losing forestry jobs, we're losing mining jobs, we're losing steel processing jobs, we're losing concrete pouring jobs, we're losing all kinds of jobs. I like the steel part of this.
Mm-hmm.
I like the H-1B visas, which we've talked about extensively on this show. To me, the best example of this is, and anybody who doubts this is a problem, I want you to go online and I want you to look at what Disney World, is that the one in Florida?
Yes.
I want you to look at what Disney World did to its IT staff. Go look that story up, because that is just one example of dozens that have happened in recent years where a company goes in and uses the H-1B visa to fire employees who have been there, in some cases, 10, 12 years. These are the people that run all the animatronics. These are the people that bring Disney to life. They fired them all and replaced them with quote-unquote contractors from India,
which are coming from other countries, yep.
And when you bring these people in, you got two things. Number one, you're not paying them any benefits at all. Number two, you're paying them less than you'd pay an American worker, even without the benefits. And number three, those workers are dependent on those visas. So you get all the unpaid overtime you want.
Mm-hmm. And half the time, I mean, you are getting people that are abusing the system. Now, the H-1B visa program lets more than 85,000 foreign workers into America each year. But the visiting worker typically ends up staying here past the time of the visa. And this is the problem that we're having here in America. And we've talked about it so many times on this show and saying, how did America get to the point that we have, where we have these companies and these executives that they hire cheap labor, whether it be somebody coming over on a visa, extending their stay, so they're here illegally. And everybody that's all up in arms about President Trump trying to get rid of illegal immigrants, this all kind of comes full circle. Again, just like him talking about buying American products, it comes full circle in the sense of, once we get rid of or pull back a little bit on these visas, there's more opportunity for American workers. And I do not want to hear the BS and saying these are jobs that American workers don't want.
No.
And a perfect example of that is, look what happened in California most recently. And we talked about it in depth on the show last month. And there is a wine industry that at one point, once all the announcements were coming out of the Trump administration, you would think, well, who's going to do that? What American's going to work in the field? Because only illegal immigrants. Well, if you have a good product, so your higher-end wine, you are going to pay workers.
Yeah.
So you are seeing people working the field, now getting benefits, getting medical, dental, 401k opportunities,
yeah,
and getting paid upwards of $30 an hour.
Turns out if you pay people $25 an hour and give them benefits, they'll pick grapes.
And
who
in
knew?
The short term,
who
yes,
knew?
Maybe some companies, and I can't sit here and be a hypocrite because I've been originally in the same mindset of saying, you know, a $15 plus an hour wage is too high. Now I've pulled back and looked at the situation more realistically. And in the short term, yes, it may hurt businesses. In the long term, it will benefit more Americans. More Americans will have jobs. More Americans will have money to spend. In turn, they put it back into the country.
Typically, when we think about immigration, we think about farm workers, we think about landscapers, we think about dishwashers, we think about maids, we think about nannies, those types of people. The H-1B visa program is unique in that it applies almost exclusively to Silicon Valley engineers. That's who's coming over on these visas. And the left makes the argument, well, it's just a few people. It's not really... Yes, it is. Because what's happening is there are a handful of companies. There's a lottery system to get H-1B visa applicants to work for your company. The system was set up so that small companies, 2-, 3-, 4-person shops that can't hire Americans because everybody wants to go work at Google, could get some smart people from overseas. The problem is, the big companies have figured out how to game the lottery system. So what you have is you have companies like Disney and Google and Microsoft basically flying people in from India, exploiting them for the duration of their visas, and then cutting them loose. Mm-hmm. And then they go out and they get another batch. These are jobs that Americans, particularly students at places like Tufts University, spend upwards of $200,000 in college education to get. So imagine you just spent $200,000 to get a computer, an advanced degree in computer science, and you can't get a job anywhere because they're flying people in from India who they can pay $15 an hour. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. That's a big problem.
Ludicrous to me for anybody to try to dispute that. Or say, well, no,
that's
going too far.
They can't, and they know they can't. Mm-hmm. And that's why Silicon Valley has been keeping its mouth shut about this. They made a lot of noise.
That's a problem. You have so many of these executives and these hot big companies that have a lot of pull in Washington that for so many years have been able to get away with this.
Sure.
And this is the state of America right now. This is where we are, where so many millions of Americans are without jobs. People are under the poverty level because of this, whether they're on public assistance. There is a way to get out of this. Whether you agree or disagree with many of the policies that President Trump puts forward, there's no way, again, as I say, you can't dispute this. You can't say or deny the fact it is not a good idea to pull this back and allow more Americans to get these jobs.
Well, this is, dare I say, what you get when you have somebody from the business world sitting in the Oval Office rather than a politician who has never worked a day in his life, who spent their entire life in academia, or who spent their entire life in a courtroom before they embarked on their political career. Mm-hmm. These aren't people who understand business. These aren't people who look at balance sheets and know what that is. These aren't people who understand the ramifications of supply chain on job creation. Donald Trump is a guy that gets that. The people around him are people who get that. This executive order is a good move. It doesn't go far enough, fast enough. I think is a strong argument you can make against it.
No, because it's not going to completely end the program.
It doesn't stop the H-1B visa thing happening mm-hmm. this year because we're already in the middle of the lottery. We're already in the middle of the season. It is going to provide an immediate boost to the U.S. steel industry, which is great. There's going to be a lot of happy people in Ohio. There's going to be a lot of happy people in Pennsylvania. There's going to be a lot of happy people in Kansas.
Well, especially in a time where we're talking about putting so much focus on the infrastructure here in America.
Yeah. Exactly, because with all this bridge construction and road construction and rail construction and everything else that he wants to do, we're going to need a lot of steel. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be some good steel jobs out there for a few years. The rest of it, we need some action, and this is something that Congress really needs to drill in on. You know, I like the way that Canada approaches it. You cannot get a job in Canada if you're not a Canadian citizen, unless the company that wants to hire you has interviewed every possible Canadian, everybody working age in Canada, and been unable to fill the position. The person that they hire doesn't even have to be as qualified. as the foreign worker. They just have to be Canadian.
It's true.
And this is a reality that Canadian businesses operate under.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a reality that United States businesses should operate under. It is one thing to say, we want the best minds in the world over here working on our stuff. Okay? We have a nuclear program because of that. We have nuclear weapons because of that. Because we looted all of the best brains out of Germany and what became the Soviet republics after World War II and brought them here and put them to work for us. We want to do that in business. What we don't want is hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of people coming over here and taking high-tech jobs because it's cheaper for Mark Zuckerberg
mm-hmm.
or it's cheaper for Disney.
But that's all that matters to these companies. That's all that matters. That's the bottom line to these executives. What is the way that I can get the job done proficiently
yep.
and the most cheap cost to the company?
And understand, when you're talking about engineers, we're talking about millions of dollars in savings. When you're talking about IT guys, you're talking about millions of dollars in savings. There are powerful financial incentives for these big companies to rig the system and fill their ranks with exploitable foreign workers. It's not sustainable. It penalizes Americans who did what they were told, went to college, got that degree, have the skills. Yeah, but you won't work for $15 an hour and you want benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably want to go home at some point. We get these people over here from India and just beat the crap out of them for 4 years and then kick them out. Oh, and by the way, you know what those people from India do when they go back home? Steal our technology and start their own technology companies. This has been going on for 15 years now.
Yeah.
So we lose on both ends. This is good.
I like it.
This is a good plan. Trump's doing a good thing here. Credit where credit is due. It is WMFO Medford. In world news, United Kingdom Prime Minister Theresa May shocked her country and the European Union with a surprise call for a general election on June 8th. May, who said a year ago that she would not call a snap election, made the move to try and bolster her support in Parliament ahead of upcoming Brexit negotiations. May's Conservative Party currently holds a slim majority of 17 seats in the House of Commons, which has allowed Labour and other parties to derail her Brexit negotiation plans. The special election could give her a stronger majority, with current polls favoring the Conservatives, or could backfire if anti-Brexit forces manage to win a majority, potentially putting last year's historic anti-EU vote in jeopardy. The measure passed 522-13 in a vote this morning. A two-thirds vote of the 650 members of Parliament was needed to pass.
I was actually really surprised when I heard this, and exactly like you just said, my first instinct was to say, is this going to jeopardize the situation and or the progress with Brexit? I mean, you had a vote where the people of the area said, you know, this is what is happening. And yeah, my computer went off.
Is there loud sex happening outside the studio that I need? Is this like that tennis match last night? No. to be clear about this, what? Can you watch porn on your own time? What are you doing?
The volume clicked on. I need to turn it off.
Can you turn it off?
I know. I need
okay,
to.
Okay, there we go.
Turn the. Just ignore it for like a half second.
Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. We're available for your children's birthday parties and bar mitzvahs. We're available to fill in on your radio station, 855-915-9636. Call and book us now. I'll make Lisa leave her laptop at home. The opposition, Labour in particular, could not get a hold of Parliament and just undo the Brexit vote. What they could do, if they won a majority of seats in Parliament, is basically put any exit plan to a vote in front of the people of the United Kingdom, which would de facto be a second yay or nay on Brexit. And then if the people vote no and they say we don't like this, there may be some way that they could undo the divorce letter that was sent.
So what do you think the likelihood of that happening is?
I think the likelihood of that happening is slim to none, because as much as there was a lot of noise made about, oh, the people in England didn't know what they were voting for, and no, people didn't really want Brexit, the overwhelming support that the Conservative Party has right now, they're up by 22 points in the polls,
mm-hmm.
okay? Imagine seeing that in the United States. It'll be a landslide. They're up 22 points in the polls. She should get her majority, Theresa May. This is a calculated move on her part.
She just came out recently and broke that she was saying there's going to be no debates for this.
Yeah.
Upcoming election.
No, and nor should there be. Mm-hmm. You've got 7 weeks to campaign. Anything that you say can and will be used against you. You got a 22-point margin against Labor. Run.
It's almost like a no-holds-barred, you know, one-on-one competition. We're not going to have anything really, you know, too long to campaign. It's just like, here we go.
Yeah. But it's basically May saying, I need a majority to get this done. And mm-hmm. she is correct, because if the European Union senses any weakness in Britain's positions as it's negotiating Brexit, they will take advantage of that.
In the sense of which way?
In the sense of...
with regards to trade or...
everything. You name an area.
Because I feel like trade is going to be the biggest problem that will face Britain with Brexit.
Trade
with the European Union.
Access to the single market is probably the most important thing that's on the table in all of this, but there are also security concerns, and there are also immigration concerns, and there are also...
But if Britain is separating itself from the European Union, what do they have with immigration and security? They're going to be essentially fending for themselves and also writing the rules, because one of the biggest things with Brexit, you had these people on the pro-Brexit side, almost like a nationalistic mentality.
Yeah, they want to build a wall.
We want our country back. We don't want to follow... You know, Britain kind of got sucked into this whole refugee crisis that was pretty much started by Germany and said, hey, everybody, come on in. And then, you know, you have a couple million people coming into the country.
They want to build a wall on the White Cliffs of Dover is part of what's going on here. But they don't want to lose access to the European single market. Europe is going to have things to say about that.
Now, you have Britain being one of the biggest financial hubs in the world. And from my standpoint and understanding, I would think, and why I raise the question of trade being so important, European Union still needs to be a part of that. They still need to have that open market with it.
Yeah.
To use that, because what, your other big financial hub in the European Union is Brussels?
Yeah, Brussels is, there are a few of them. Amsterdam is big, Brussels is big, Berlin is big, mm-hmm. but none of them are as big as London. London, New York City, and Tokyo are the three global hubs of financial activity.
Mm-hmm.
There are other places that are rising in importance, but those are the big three. All of the global financial infrastructure roots through those three cities. So imagine that you suddenly decide you want Boston to no longer be the biggest city in Massachusetts. You want to go build the biggest city in Massachusetts somewhere out in the western part of the state. You're going to have one big problem with that. Every highway points to Boston. And because every highway points to Boston, you need a massive, massive infrastructure outlay
mm-hmm.
to create your new city. This is the same reality that faces the banking industry. All of the infrastructure ends in London and links through London. Nobody's got the money. Nobody's got the will, really. There are countries that would love to step up. Okay, I'm sure the Russians would love Moscow to be a financial hub. I'm sure the Chinese would love Beijing to be a financial mm-hmm. hub, or somewhere in Singapore. The Emirates would love to have Dubai be a financial hub. There's no shortage of suitors. The problem is the cost involved and the disruption that it would cause to get everybody switched over out of the London reality into something new.
Look at the turmoil that would be caused in the financial markets.
London ain't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. London is not going anywhere. London continues to be a global financial center. The rest of British industry, however, becomes vulnerable. Because Europe can always close the door to British steel, British chemicals, British agricultural products, British meats, British seafood.
Mm-hmm.
And now, what are you doing? Now, the United Kingdom happens to be a fairly large market by itself in its own right, one of the largest in that part of the world, which means everybody in the EU wants to get in there and sell their stuff because they're good customers. Mm-hmm. It's a big market. And that may soften things a little bit. There may be agricultural pressure and retail pressure and manufacturing pressure to say, we need to keep that market open.
But if there are threats with imports versus exports, couldn't Britain become self-sustainable?
Yes, Britain could absolutely be self-sustainable. The problem is you can't grow your economy unless you're involved in global trade.
It's true.
That's the broader reality. And if you're a publicly traded company and you're only serving one nation, your attractiveness to investors goes way down. People love buying Coca-Cola because Coca-Cola is a global brand,
mm-hmm.
you know, versus Polar Cola, which you can only buy in New England.
Which is delicious.
Which is delicious. and they make great products and they make great money. But if you talk about a company that an investor wants, mm-hmm. unless Polar is sitting there saying, we got a rollout plan for Canada, Mexico, and the rest of the United States.
It's the same thing if you're looking at beer. Yeah. A small craft beer, you know, an Aeronaut, which is down the street, compared to Bud that was bought by InBev.
Yeah.
Because now it's a global product.
Yep.
And everybody wants it. And it's more profitable.
Actually, with Bud, not everybody wants it anymore, and that would be a good thing.
It's true. In sports news, we learned many questions remained after ex-Patriot star committed suicide. Aaron Hernandez, the former New England Patriot tight end who was serving a life sentence for a murder conviction, was found dead early Wednesday in an apparent suicide inside his prison cell, a Massachusetts correction officer said. Correction officers discovered Hernandez hanging by a bedsheet attached to a single cell window at about 3:05 a.m., said the State Department of Correction spokesperson Chris M. Fallon. Hernandez, 27, had attempted to, quote, block the door from inside by jamming the door with various items, Fallon said in a statement. Officers attempted life-saving techniques and transported him to the Sousa Baranowski Correctional Center in Shirley to a local hospital where he was declared dead within an hour. Hernandez's lawyer, Jose Baez, said there had been no correspondence with his family to indicate he was considering ending his life. Hernandez was still appealing a murder conviction in state court. Quote, Aaron was looking forward to the opportunity for a second chance to prove his innocence. Those who love and care about him are heartbroken and determined to find the truth surrounding his untimely death. That was said by Baez, his lawyer. Now,
two late details on this, yes. Both coming from WBZ. One is that another inmate said that Hernandez was smoking synthetic marijuana
the night before.
Last night.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the same thing that sent what's-his-face to the Foxborough police.
Yeah.
Who was it? Chandler Jones?
It was.
Yeah, that's it.
One night, our old buddy, Chandler Jones, decided to take synthetic marijuana.
Yeah.
Also known on the street as flacca.
Flacca!
And decided to partially undress and walk into the Foxborough police station. What happened, I don't know. I'm sure there was a lot that was covered up.
Yes.
Thank you. All the people over at Gillette and the Kraft family for that one.
Subsequently exiled to the Arizona Cardinals.
But yes, so this being one of the later details that has been revealed. The other later detail that has been revealed is that earlier accounts were saying that it was written in blood when in fact it is written in ink. He had John 3:16, which is, you know, everybody knows, most famously from sports with Tim Tebow. And it talks about, you know, living forever. It's a Bible verse. He wrote it on some part of his body, but somebody, a lot of accounts are saying on his forehead. I've heard so many guesses to what had happened. My two predictions or two ideas that possibly could have happened is one that yes, he did have marijuana and it was either a bad dose and he just went into this psychotic mindset and took his life.
Flacca!
Now, if we weren't on the show last week, actually it didn't come out till Friday. So Friday, he was found not guilty in the double murder trial of two people that so many witnesses were saying he shot him.
Folks, if you kill anybody, Hire Baez. The guy is the best in the country.
Yeah.
I know I got him on speed dial. You should have him on speed dial.
If anybody saw the... I don't even know if it was relief or elation, happiness, that once that verdict was announced, that you could see in the eyes of Aaron Hernandez, to think that somebody that had that much happiness, or I use that word loosely because you are still serving life prison sentence on Friday, then decide on Tuesday to take your life.
Flacca.
Within those 5 days, there could have been a situation where somebody either from the side of the defendants, or the prosecutors, the victims' families, maybe got in contact with them and said, hey, we know that you are not going to get, there's no justice for this. You take your life or we're going to take somebody in your family's. So was it a situation where...
No, I don't. I doubt it's anything like that. And full disclosure, one of my clients represents the family of Owen Lloyd. So I have a bit of a horse in this race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not directly, not in a significant way, but I do have a bit of a horse in this race, and you know, a little bit, tiny bit of insight into things. The Flacca aspect of this, to me, is the most interesting, and the fact that he barricaded the door. Because now you have to ask the question of whether or not he's hallucinating that somebody, some victim, is coming after him to exact justice and telling him to kill himself. Just a theory on my part. That's all this is. Wild speculation. Or if he finally felt some measure of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you have to think, you know, when you are convicted of a murder and are now facing your entire life being in prison, they put you on suicide watch for the first, you know, 48 hours, first couple weeks. He never showed any emotion. Never showed any sort of regret. And there has been many accounts saying that he is a psychopath.
Yeah.
He had psychopathic.
They don't usually
tendencies.
Kill themselves, the psychopaths.
Yeah, so there had to be something where this man had a moment, and I do not believe it was all of a sudden you got a wave of guilt with feeling that relief or elation on Friday.
You know, Flacca is a powerful thing.
For 4 years.
Flacca is a powerful and mysterious thing.
That is completely different. Now we're introducing
Flacca
into the situation, drugs,
yeah,
where it does... make you do crazy things.
Yeah, you know, another possibility is he assumed when he was cleared of this double murder that would somehow allow him to be cleared of the Owen Lloyd murder. He may have found out that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. You're still going to be in jail for the rest of your life. Because the evidence in the Owen Lloyd case was even more clear cut. Where he's in the car with Owen Lloyd, mm-hmm, and pulls the car over, and moments later, Owen Lloyd is dead. And you have other people who are in the car saying, huh, Aaron got out of the car and I heard some gunshots.
And then he didn't come back in the car.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know.
This is crazy, though. I mean, to wake up and see that. I looked at my phone and I get so many news updates, and I'm like, what? You're kidding? And I had to look at the sources, and I'm like, is this a joke?
This is a week when everything crazy happens. It's 4:20. It's 4:20. What happens during this week?
But the
Boston
biggest question
Marathon
is...
bombings, shelter in place, city of Boston shut down, mm-hmm, Aaron Hernandez commits suicide, Hitler's birthday, Columbine, Oklahoma City, Branch Davidian compound. This week, for whatever reason, is cursed. This is a week when everybody goes crazy. So... stay home, snuggle up with your leftover peeps from Easter, and come out on Sunday. After the week's over, we're all good. We can move on. But this is crazy week.
Mm-hmm. This on a day that the Patriots were going to the White House,
yeah,
to be honored by our president. And may I just say, in the 20-minute speech, the somewhat awkward speech that President Trump did give about the Patriots, he didn't utter Tom Brady's name once.
Tom Brady
was not there.
Tom Brady apparently was celebrating his parents' wedding anniversary, and the way that he phrased it this morning, saying that some family business has come up with everything that his mom has been going through, makes me concerned for his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to downplay it as much as, no, I just got to go do this family thing. Keep in mind, his mother has been at death's door for a little while now, and she may have had a setback. She may be fine, and they just all want to spend time together, but it's crazy week.
Mm-hmm. Well, and more crazy, in entertainment news, we learn one more gets the axe at Fox News. Bill O'Reilly has been forced out of his position as primetime host on Fox News, the company said on Wednesday, after the disclosure of settlements involving sexual harassment allegations against him. His abrupt and embarrassing outs ended a two-decade reign as one of the most popular and influential commentators in television. Quote, after a thorough and careful review of the allegations, the company and Bill O'Reilly have agreed that Bill O'Reilly will not be returning to Fox News Channel. 21st Century Fox said, the parent company of Fox News. Mr. O'Reilly is departing 2.5 weeks after an investigation by the New York Times revealed how Fox News and 21st Century Fox had repeatedly stood by him, even as sexual harassment allegations against him mounted. The Times found that the company and Bill O'Reilly had reached settlements with 5 women who had complained about sexual harassment or other inappropriate behaviors by him. The agreements totaled $13 million.
Nobody should be happy about this. Nobody should be celebrating. Because part of what happened here is organizations that have had an axe to grind against Bill O'Reilly for more than a decade for the things that he says on the air. One. And there's no altruism involved in that. This isn't about sexual harassment. This is about, hey, we found a way to take this guy down.
Well, this comes in the wake where big story, week after week, we were covering Roger Ailes.
Yeah.
Who led Fox News for
but
how
Roger
many
Ailes,
decades?
Roger Ailes is a different story because Roger Ailes is behind the scenes. Roger Ailes is not the guy behind the microphone.
But
Roger Ailes is not the guy.
This was the in for them to do it. Oh, clearly we have a sexual harassment problem here at Fox News. This is a way to do it. Hey, are there any women around here that maybe got touched on the butt or, you know, had dinner? Of course, if you have a disgruntled female and... I know I'm going to get a lot of slack for this, and I do not condone whatsoever sexual harassment in the workplace. I mean, I get sexually harassed by customers all the time. It just happens, but I do not condone it. But I can understand, and you do have a point when you say this was a way to get him off the air.
Sure.
Because, of course, was this a situation where they were going around to women that maybe hadn't gotten a job there and said, do you think... Put that in your head. Do you think that's the reason why you didn't get hired? Did Bill O'Reilly have something to do with it? Because maybe, did he ask you out?
I've read the Times coverage, and the women who came forward against him are credible. They're definitely credible. The stories fit a pattern. This guy's got issues, okay?
But are you surprised?
For 23 years.
This is corporate culture at Fox News.
Right. For 23 years, this guy's been on the air. And so for 23 years, this guy's had issues. In fact, he only got 5 women in 23 years. Either he's paying a lot more of them off, or this isn't happening as often as everyone would make it out to be. Now, nobody in the network liked the guy because he's a hard charger, okay? He's a perfectionist. He makes life miserable for everybody around him. One of these producers wasn't even sexually harassed. She was just screamed at and humiliated, and being a millennial snowflake, couldn't handle that. So she went to human resources and got herself a golden parachute. The argument being made that if I'd been a man, I wouldn't have been treated this way. That's a bunch of BS. We cannot be in a situation where activist groups and special interests are dictating what's on television. Okay? If you don't like what's on television, you change the channel. You don't try and get people fired.
Mm-hmm.
And understand, this is a big target. This is a rich target for the left because he had the single biggest audience in broadcast television. Bill O'Reilly's audience was bigger than MSNBC and CNN's audience combined on a daily basis. And even when all the advertisers left, and all the sexual harassment allegations came out. The audience went up.
Mm-hmm. I think it was just most recently 50 advertisers pulled out.
Yeah.
And still, yeah, 50 advertisers abandoned his shows and women's rights groups took over.
Yeah. These advertisers aren't bailing out because they give two craps about women. Other than the optics of looking good to women so women will keep buying their products. In a lot of cases, this is a marketing opportunity. Okay, this is stunt marketing. Mm-hmm. Hey, everybody else is doing it, so we're going to get on board and put our statement out too. Oh, no, we don't advertise on O'Reilly. He's a sexist. But what's
How
driving
many
it?
How companies do that?
What's driving it are these online activist groups. Mm-hmm. And their goal is to silence the opposition. It's not about justice for women. It's not about empowering women in the workplace. It's not about protecting women's rights. It is about taking Bill O'Reilly off the air.
But how many times do people on the left do that? That is the mentality of the left, to silence the opposition. That's, because God forbid, if you are a Republican or if you have conservative thinkings or lean right, you are a crazy person.
Well,
you are a gun-toting, racist bigot, and it was on display so much in this election. It makes me sick.
In a lot of areas, the left is rightfully terrified of dissent and disagreement because their beliefs are illogical and hypocritical and in some cases just don't match reality. So when you got somebody like O'Reilly out there, who, by the way, was not this staunch conservative. Mm-hmm. O'Reilly was a straight centrist, mostly centrist
listen
guy.
Listen to Glenn Beck, Alex Jones.
Yeah, those guys are over on the right.
Yeah.
Okay, Glenn Beck, he is right wing. You want to take Glenn Beck off the air, you're probably
Bill
doing
O'Reilly
him a favor.
Because Bill O'Reilly, you know, he bases his whole show on a no spin.
Right.
But God forbid, you're putting Donald Trump in a somewhat popular light.
Which he wasn't doing.
At all.
More often than not, he went after the left than the right, because there tends to be a lot more hypocrisy when you look on the left than on the right.
Well, when you have a side that self-praises themselves on open conversations and listening to each other,
yeah,
and making, you know, America, bringing everybody together, they are the furthest from that.
Right. What they have done in taking Bill O'Reilly off the air is stifle free speech. What they have done is shut down one of the most popular voices in American broadcasting. That is not anything that anybody should be proud of.
But also,
that is not anything that should be happening in the United States of America.
But that's what we will focus on. But you can also dismiss the fact that there were allegations against him.
I'm not apologizing for the guy. What the guy did was reprehensible.
No. Absolutely.
Okay.
And but I want to make that clear. I don't justify any of his actions of what he does. But the way that this came about, the way that this was introduced, was wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's not that the way that it was introduced through the New York Times article was wrong.
Should I say bolstered?
The way that it was bolstered and the pressure that was brought to bear, and the way that major U.S. companies were played like a fiddle because they spend all day listening to the noisy children on the internet. They were played like a fiddle by activist groups who don't give a damn about women, who don't give a damn about women's rights, who don't give a damn about women in the workplace. They give a damn about getting Bill O'Reilly off the air, and they've been trying to do it for 23 years. They won.
Advertisers, the bottom line is money.
They won because Fox is gutless. They won because these advertisers are gutless and easily manipulated. And they won because there is this delusion state in the United States of America that 1,000 people making noise on the internet is somehow relevant and important to our lives. 1,000 people making noise on the internet is a bunch of screaming children, nothing more. 10,000 tweets is a bunch of screaming children, nothing more. You show me something trending on Twitter for 3 months from millions of people, and I'll show you an issue that people actually care about. And if Fox had simply rode this out for another couple of weeks, whole thing would have gone away. Whole thing would have gone away. because no advertiser is stupid enough to walk away from the top-rated program on cable. Now, does the guy deserve to get fired for being a jerk to women? Yeah, he does. Okay? I'm not arguing that point. But I'm saying we shouldn't celebrate it. We absolutely shouldn't celebrate who's behind it. This is a bad day for freedom of speech in this country. This is a bad day for America. In technology news, Facebook is promoting augmented reality, such as that found in Pokemon Go at its annual F8 Developers Conference. Facebook chair Mark Zuckerberg told USA Today that initial augmented reality, or AR, content will require Facebook users to look at things through a smartphone's camera. And he also pointed to a period 7 years from now when people will use glasses to see a variety of AR content. You might remember that as Google Glass. That's what Mark Zuckerberg showed off in his interview with USA Today and what he was talking about at F8 today, Google Glass. We all remember how Google Glass turned out.
But under a different name.
You know, I hear Zuckerberg and I hear others talk about, oh, you know, augmented reality, it's going to be the future. Virtual reality is going to be the future. And then I see what we're doing with it, and I say to myself, what value is added here?
None. May I just say, in Miami, where I stayed, you know, my boyfriend's family friend has a virtual reality set up.
Sure.
It is the coolest thing.
I could have one in my house tomorrow. I got the computer to run it.
It is amazing. And we had talked about it on the show before and how people can use it, especially in, you know, maybe schools that, hey, you put in virtual reality of Italy. You can go anywhere in the world and feel like you're there.
Yeah.
I was under the sea. I was next to a whale. It's incredible, the technology. But it does, you know, kind of disheartens me when I hear these, you know, stories about Facebook talking about live through your phone. Everything's going to be done through your phone. And I hate my phone. I hate the technology of it. I hate what it does and how much people depend on it. I do. And don't get me wrong, I'm not being a hypocrite because I do use it very much for so many things. Promotion for the show, blogging, and whatnot. So there are benefits of it. But if it all went away tomorrow, I wouldn't be upset.
There is no shortage of vapid, mindless drones who will be all over augmented reality.
I mean, this is why people can't have ridiculously low levels of interpersonal communication skills. People don't know how to talk to each other anymore because people don't talk to each other anymore. They think it's easier, instead of talking face-to-face, let me just get everything out in a text message or whatnot. Like, it's crazy to
me. Well, one of the examples Zuckerberg gave, WMFO Medford, they like it when I say that. One of the examples Zuckerberg gave is, I could sit down in a restaurant and see a note on the wall that my friend had left there for me, virtually, to tell me what to order on the menu. Well, like, why wouldn't I just talk to my friend?
Why? Exactly. It's cool?
That's not an interpersonal relationship anymore. And you got to read between the lines on these things, because really what he's talking about is, we're going to be able to put advertising everywhere. And not only are we going to know where you are, we're going to be able to see what you're looking at. So we can target the advertising even more.
Oh, it's insane. When I was just away in Miami for the 3 days following, just because I had my location set up, whether I was checking in on Instagram or Facebook, there were a dozen emails from Travelzoo.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so many more that were advertising restaurants or hotels in Miami.
Yeah.
Is that a coincidence?
No, it's because they're reading your GPS and they know where you are. It's because you're on Facebook. 60 Minutes, not this past Sunday, but a week before, did an outstanding report on how social media applications get you hooked. The tricks that they use to make their programs addictive so that you can't live without them. I strongly suggest you watch it. It should be online on CBS.com. 855-915-9636 is the phone number. It is The Big Picture.